was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. ...1932, that was the year. India, January 4, 1932.
Mohandas, awake.
What is it? What is the trouble?
English soldiers are here again.
English soldiers? I understand. I will come out to see them.
What is it this time, Mohandas? They will not arrest you again, will they?
Peace, peace, good wife. They may arrest me. They have before. But my program of Satyagraha will continue. Come. Good day, gentlemen.
Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, I arrest you in the name of the Crown.
On what charge, please?
Under an ordinance of 1827, which permits the internment or deportation of any person charged with treasonous activity, without benefit of trial.
Standing in silent farewell to his wife and his disciples, including British Madeline Slade, Gandhi, named by his followers Mahatma, the great soul, began another of his many incarcerations for political activities in behalf of his people. Before he was led away, he wrote a note to the Indian people.
Do not swerve from our nonviolent course of the past and our path of the truth. Give all in the service of our country. Civil disobedience will win.
On September 20, Mahatma Gandhi announced he would fast unto death. Shortly, he was released because of dangers to his health suffered through his self-imposed hunger strike.
1932. That was the year.
March 12 to April 4 might well be termed the 24 bloody days of 1932. On March 12, Ivar Kruger, unmarried Swedish match king, shot himself to death at Paris, France, leaving a spectacular, fabulous indebtedness which closed the Stockholm Stock Exchange, sent big business into a flurry of anxiety. 2 days later, George Eastman, unmarried philanthropist, manufacturers of cameras and films, shot himself to death in his home at Rochester, New York, leaving a note.
To my friends, my work is done. Why wait? G.E.
The next day, after discussing Eastman's note, Lincoln Donaldson, chairman of a lithograph company, shot himself to death in his home at Fort Thomas, Kentucky. The next day, M. Margus, manager of a branch match factory of Kruger and Toll, suicide. March 19, Irving Townsend at Richmond Hill, New York, suicide. March 28 at Cleveland, Ohio, Lewis H. Kittredge, ex-president of the Peerless Car Company, suicide. April 2 at Sussex, England, Edward Marjorie Banks, American-born member of Parliament, suicide. April 4 at Montclair, New Jersey, Mrs. Raymond B. Fosdick killed her 2 children and herself. March 12 to April 4, throughout the civilized world, 24 days of self-destruction. And as the fates grinned in satanic glee, 2 great rulers, President Paul Dume of the Republic of France and Ki Inukai, Premier of Japan, within 9 days were felled by the hands of assassins. And on May 12, 1932...
After more than 2 months of horrifying anxiety, the world read of the discovery of the piteous little body of Charles Augustus Lindbergh, Jr., within 5 miles of the palatial home from which he had been kidnapped March 1st.
Monday, March 21. Leaving strewn in its path irreparable damage, injury, and death, a violent tornado swept across the southern states of Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina, with a property loss of more than $3 million, more than 2,000 injured persons, and more than 300 dead. Thus, with relentless and hideous tread, death stalks for the first half of 1932. That was the year. The U.S. Federal Prison, Atlanta, Georgia, May 4.
Come on, Al.
I tell you, boys, this is a bum rap. I've just been made the victim of public clamor, that's all.
Come on, let's get going.
But I tell you, I ain't got this coming to me.
This is a bum rap.
Wharton Idaho, just a minute. Hold that gate a second. Can I get a story from you?
Story? What about, young man?
Well, come on, Wharton, you know what about. Al Capone.
Capone? We don't know Capone. Here all men are numbers. We do not give information. All are treated alike. None is considered as an individual.
Oh, but what?
Sorry, young man. That's all.
And Al Scarface Capone, King of the Underworld lost his title of public enemy number one to become merely number 40886, to serve a sentence of 11 years, pay a fine of $50,000 on a conviction of evading income tax laws.
1932, that was the year?
That in the early morning of May 20, exactly 5 years after Colonel Charles Lindbergh had begun his historic solo flight across the Atlantic, Amelia Earhart Putnam took off from Harbor Grace, Newfoundland, in an attempt to claim the title of the first woman to cross the Atlantic alone, carrying 420 gallons of gasoline, a bottle of hot soup, 3 cans of tomato juice, and a toothbrush. The plane headed toward its destination, Paris. But 15 hours later, after fighting a broken altimeter, fire from the exhaust, a broken gasoline gauge, heavy winds, ice on the wings of a plane, and discovering a heavy loss of fuel, Mrs. Putnam was forced to land in an Irish pasture. Another plane carried her to Paris, where she made the statement.
Ever since my transatlantic flight in the Friendship, I'd wanted to do it alone. And I did, even though I had to come down in a pasture outside Londonderry.
Early in May, in the year 1894, the ill-fated band of unemployed, Coxey's Army, came to defeat in a conflict with Washington, D.C. police. Almost to the day, 38 years later, Jacob S. Coxey, now enjoying his position as mayor of Massillon, Ohio, read in his evening newspaper,
Washington, D.C., July 28. Federal troops were called out by President Hoover today after a bloody encounter between the Bonus Expeditionary Force and police, in which one veteran was shot to death and two policemen fatally wounded.
1932, that was the year.
After two hectic national conventions, leaders of the two major U.S. political parties found themselves faced with the problem of utilizing a new medium, reaching into the homes of millions of Americans, radio broadcasting. As another national campaign soared high to the zenith of perturbed political agitation, Republican candidate incumbent President Herbert Clark Hoover and Democratic candidate Governor of New York Franklin Delano Roosevelt were heard almost nightly. As election day neared, candidate Hoover at Detroit, October 22, in his famous 10-point speech,
$1 million of gold has flowed into our country through the restored confidence abroad. 2. Currency to the amount of $250 million has been returned from hoarding through the restoration of confidence at home. 3. The values of bonds have increased by 20%.
Thus did Herbert Hoover declare his 10 points of evidence that the crisis is past and prosperity is returning. 3 days later, in Baltimore, candidate Roosevelt delivered his famous Four Horsemen speech.
A frontal attack, an onset against the Four Horsemen of present Republican leadership. The Four Horsemen of destruction, delay, deceit, despair. First, the Four Horsemen of destruction, the embodiment of the governmental policy.
On and on did candidate Roosevelt whip the four horses of his Republican adversaries, until, in conclusion,
that it has left behind its trail everywhere. He tells you that economic conditions must work themselves out. He tries to close the door of hope in your face. My friends, there is the record. No partisan words will ever wipe it out. It stands. And the lost savings of millions bid us remember.
And on November 8th, with Franklin D. Roosevelt in the stirrups, a Democratic donkey rode into the White House to the tune of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Happy Days Are Here Again, and an effective obligato of 472 electoral votes out of a total of 531. And in 1932, you were dancing and singing to the tune of...
Pink as a fiddle, I'm ready for love. I could jump over the moon up above. Pink as a fiddle, I'm ready for love. I haven't a worry, I haven't a care. Feel like a feather that's floating on air.
Fiddle and ready for love.
Soon the church bells will be ringing, and I'll march with my.
and what did she say?
Fit as a fiddle and ready for love.
Ask me a riddle, and what did she say?